It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, here we go. Let's see if we can have a radio show tonight. It's kind of up in the air, literally, right now. The thunder started about a half an hour ago. And I don't mean to sound like a broken record or anything, but I want y'all to know that if the program just goes gone, I didn't suddenly have a fit of pique and stomp away from the microphone. No, it's another predictable, typical, late afternoon, convection-driven, high-temperature, pop-up thunder shower. Obvious, one might think. But apparently a monumental challenge to the profiteering horse's rear ends over at Appalachian Power. Yes. We got rain and thunder and lightning and stuff right now. It may blow by. I hope it does. But if the program disappears, you'll know that the ancient, antiquated, rickety 19th century technology coal-fried power grid of Appalachian Power has failed once again. Because failing is what Appalachian Power does best. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of fucking sunshine. Yes, I am. And, if we get it, who knows, you may hear more thunder. No telling. But we'll try to get through a program tonight. I'd like to get through a program tonight. I'd hate to see the program knocked down two nights in the same week, but again, I'm at the mercy of our profit-driven, antiquated, rickety, 19th century technology coal-fried power grid, as brought to you by Appalachian Power, a regulated, for-profit utility here in almost level West Bicol Trump Chinyistan. So maybe on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, maybe before we get any further or before we get knocked off the air, maybe it would be a good idea for me to go ahead and extend thanks, as we do at the beginning of every program, to our subscribers. Thank you to Libby. Libby is one of the happy less than 100, and Libby is a partial sponsor of the program, helping keep us on the air every month. Thank you to Roberto, also another partial sponsor of the program. Thank you very kindly, Roberto. Thank you to Edward in Dallas. Thank you very kindly, Edward. And thank you very kindly as well to our buddy Kevin in Colorado Springs. Those are our subscribers for the fifth day of the month. And if you'd like to be a subscriber and maybe join the likes of Libby and Kevin and Roberto and Edward, then it would be wonderful. and you could stand alongside them and get your name read out on the fifth day of every month. And just go over to headon.live, press the little PayPal button, and the options there. If you want to click the box that says make this donation happen every month, then just do it and set it and forget it and walk away. That's how easy it is. Because apart from that, it's been kind of a brutal week, fundraising-wise. The first week of July has been. We find ourselves this evening with a $540 fundraising goal. That's one at 540. That's probably not going to happen. Or two at 270. Or four at 135. And much more than that, and my head begins to hurt. 54 people at $10 a piece, 10 at 54. But anyway, you slice it, you know, we're down $540 already 5 days into the month of July. The goal being that if we can keep it all, remember, if we could be even with fundraising, then we'd have a week of fundraising-free broadcasting at the end of the month. With the caveat being that the other reminder, there is the Beat the Horde of Swedes Challenge 2018 on the table to help us get to Netroots Nation at the end of July and early August and provide a little downtime and a little recharge time along the white sand beaches of the Gulf of Mexico. And I'm happy to announce that Chris in Germany knocked down a fourth of that. So we are 25%. We are one quarter of the way toward the $1,000 matching challenge, courtesy of our buddy Scott in Sweden. If you'd like to help knock that down a little further, just put a note in it when you go to PayPal and say "Beat the Swede" or something like that. Okay. So that's where that stands. All right, then. That much is taken care of. It is, like I said, Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. Let's make mention of this early on. A liberal, progressive broadcaster has passed away. Ed Schultz is gone. Died, according to RT America, of natural causes at his home in Minnesota. Now, I'm not going to say anything about RT and Putin or anything like that, because no. 64 years old and passed away. He was doing his on-air bit over at RT for the last couple of years, starting in 2016. So, our best to Ed's family. Now, as far as Thorns in the Side are concerned, it's sort of a good day because we're minus one entirely corrupt, hopelessly crooked EPA administrator. Yes. That's right. Earlier today, the news broke that EPA administrator Scott Pruitt, he puts the lotion on his skin. He of the $1,500 order for personalized fountain pens. He of the personalized G-Jaws and bric-a-bracs, monogrammed, of course, personally, as head of the EPA. He's gone. He resigned today. So that's been a long time coming. The list of his transgressions is as long as probably all of our arm. You could probably start listing Scott Pruitt's corruptions and transgressions and be halfway to the moon before you got halfway done. This guy was a crook. I know. So what's the difference? They all are. They're all of the maggot cabinet members are crooks. But just the same, it's kind of nice that he's gone. And he wrote a resignation letter, and it was a real Lulu. He made it sound like the people were marching with pitchforks and torches around his house day and night. Of course, he wasn't. But if you want to go and read the letter, I won't, because I don't want to fire up the tinny whorehouse piano at the moment. It's just a little more than I can stand. But in the era of Julius Geezer, we get announcements of resigning cabinet secretaries by Twitter. How inglorious, how ignominious. Geezer discussed us earlier today, taking to the Twitters to say, "I have accepted the resignation of Scott Pruitt as the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Within the agency, Scott has done an outstanding job, especially with those personally monogrammed $1,500 worth of fountain pens that will never be used. The Senate confirmed Deputy at EPA Andrew Wheeler will on Monday assume duties as the acting administrator of the EPA. I have no doubt that Andy will, because that's Andy, will continue on with our great and lasting EPA agenda. We've made tremendous progress, and the future of the EPA is very bright." Well, it is, and getting brighter all the time with every passing moment that the climate change denying thugs remain in charge of it. Brighter and, hotter. Sheesh. Yeah, nasty business. But it's a hell of a list that Pruitt compiled in the space of about a year and a half. You got to work at it to be as corrupt as Scott Pruitt. I mean, there's the, let's see. Oh, by the way, in case you're wondering, the EPA Inspector General will continue to investigate Pruitt's potential malfeasance in office, as is only right. Quitting your cabinet post is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. For instance, he frequently traveled home to Oklahoma on your dime, our dime. He used a private plane. He used a military jet instead of flying commercial. Ran about $60,000. So the Inspector General is going to be looking at all of Scott Pruitt's 2017 travel. Then Trey Gowdy, believe it or not, a Republican there in the House Oversight Committee, the chair of that committee. Well, he decided he would launch his own inquiry into Pruitt's practices. And among other things, and Gowdy didn't do much about this, you might recall that committee had a conniption at Rod Rosenstein over document production. But the EPA told the committee to go pound sand, and, well, so what? Among other things, Scott Pruitt said that he was, he had to take first class or private travel because of security concerns. Because people would come up to him and tell him how horrible he was at his job, and what a hopelessly corrupt and malignant little figure that he was. Nobody ever threatened him or anything. But nonetheless, the EPA memo that CNN got hold of said that, well, if Administrator Pruitt flew coach, the occasional lashing out from passengers might endanger his life. What, he'd shit his pants to death in terror? There were charter flights last summer up to $14,000 for rides home to Oklahoma, right? There were the massive raises for members of his staff. Two staff members who often did personal tasks for Pruitt got a tasty raise. Among other things, Millen Hupp, one of his staffers, interviewed by the House Oversight Committee, said, well, she helped him find rental properties, you know, for him and Mrs. Administrator. And she was the one who inquired of that vile hotel in the old post office building to find out if they had an old used mattress that Pruitt might buy. I know, it grosses me out. Then there was the outreach to the CEO of Chick-fil-A, trying to get a Chick-fil-A franchise for Mrs. Administrator Pruitt. You know, because he and his wife love Chick-fil-A. Because it's a franchise of faith. Yes. He had his personal security detail, a very expensive security detail, acting as his personal errand guys and women. That included, but was not limited to, no, really, zipping around from one Ritz-Carlton hotel to the next to find their lotion, because Scott Pruitt was particularly fond of Ritz-Carlton lotion. Yes, it's true. It puts the lotion on its skin. And then it sends the help out again. Let's see, there were personal trips to Disneyland and the Rose Bowl. Meanwhile, the Rose Bowl tickets themselves were provided by a PR firm that amazingly represents the oil and gas industry. Go figure. There was $30,000 in security costs for Scott Pruitt to go to Italy in 2017. Probably to meet with some Italian proto-fascist who also denied climate change. Who knows? No sooner was he confirmed than he requested 24/7 security. You know, that his obsession with security, and, you know, nobody was out there. I'm not aware of anybody, the Sierra Club, NRDC, any of those folks going, you know what, somebody needs to take him out. No. I mean, they did file some FOIAs and stuff, but that's not exactly a threat against one's life. It almost makes you wonder if he was worried about something else. Maybe Scott Pruitt knew a little something about certain associations of the Trump regime, and he wanted to make sure that he didn't suddenly get all sick with some mysterious substance made in some mysterious lab, in some mysterious part of Mother Russia. Oh yeah, this guy was a real Lulu. Who was the asshole who was flying around on our dime and spending money like a drunken sailor from DHHR? One of those doctor types, one of those Republican doctors from Georgia, something like that. Yeah, Pruitt made him look like a piker. This guy is so crooked that when he finally goes to his long home, they will have to screw him into the dirt because he'll be too crooked to bury. Then there was the $43,000 cone of silence in Pruitt's office that he ordered up without going through legal channels. Yeah. Because it was more than $5,000, and you have to notify Congress if you're going to drop more than $5,000 on office improvements. Yeah, really. 12 fountain pens, as previously mentioned, with the EPA's seal and Pruitt's signature on them. For a total of 1,560. Here, I'm just because I'm curious. How's that work out ciphering? Okay, 1,500 divided by 12. That's $125 a pen. Wow. Fountain pens. Now it goes on and on and on. Including the time in April or so when Scott Pruitt went to talk to his boss and said, "You know what? That Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, he's not much of an attorney general, is he, boss? Why don't you fire him and make me attorney general? I'd be a Jim Dandy attorney general. I already know where to order the fountain pens with my signature on it, and we could put the seal of the Department of Justice right on there, and it would look, oh, it'd be making America great again." But for some reason or another, Trump didn't take him up on it. But again, this was nothing new. Way back when he was just the Attorney General of Oklahoma, he reimbursed himself about $65,000 from his campaign. That may not have been exactly, what's the word I'm looking for here? Oh yeah, legal. And yet, as happy an evening as this may seem, by the way, let's check in a couple of emails. Ron in Raleigh says, "Now Scotty can go home and run for governor without the impediment of stealing from the American people. I'm sure the fine people of Oklahoma will be glad to elect him to the highest office in the state, taking in consideration his sterling performance as EPA chief." Oh, absolutely, Ron, holding back all them job-killing regulations. Maybe even having a hand in making sure that science couldn't find out just how poisoned the hillbillies are. Lee with a reminder. "Hey, Bob, remember this from the New York Times? Mr. Pruitt instead wanted the coin to feature some combination of symbols more reflective of himself and the Trump administration. Among the possibilities, a buffalo to evoke Mr. Pruitt's home state, Oklahoma, and a Bible verse to reflect his faith." Yes, EPA commemorative coins. Order yours tomorrow from the Franklin Mint. They'll probably be going real cheap. No kidding. But as happy a day as this seems, It may be one of those be careful what you wish for moments. And more on that in a sec. Thank you very kindly, Ralphs. Ralphs just said, all right, I'm good for $25. I'll chip in 25 more if somebody else matches the $25. So that would take us down below $500. That would take us down to $465 if someone will match a $25 challenge, courtesy of Ralphs. And thank you very kindly. Glenn just jumped in on the Beat the Swede. Hammer the Swede, says Glenn. Thank you very, very kindly, Glenn. So, $25 challenge on the table, if anybody wants to answer that. But like I said, Pruitt being gone may be a mixed blessing. Because now you get, as we noted from the Tangerine Tiberius's tweet, Andrew Wheeler. Andrew Wheeler. And to use the Shakespearean phrase, what a piece of work he is. Oh, yeah. He's a dandy. But before we go into Andrew Wheeler, no, you really might. I'm going to go back on what I said. Because we'll do it without the tinny whorehouse piano. But you really have to hear or read Pruitt's resignation letter to get the full force and effect, the full ambiance, if you will, of his ability to leap onto the cross and start driving the nails into his own palms. Mr. President, it has been an honor to serve you in the cabinet as administrator of the EPA. Truly, your confidence in me has blessed me personally and enabled me to advance your agenda beyond what anyone anticipated at the beginning of your administration. Bullshit. We knew exactly what he was going to do, and we knew he'd get away with doing it. Because, of course, there's a compliant Congress back there, too. Your courage, steadfastness, and resolute commitment to get results for the American people, both with regard to improved environmental outcomes, as well as historical regulatory reform, is in fact occurring at an unprecedented pace. And I thank you for the opportunity to serve you and the American people in helping achieve those ends. Zip! That is why it is hard for me to advise you, I'm stepping down as administrator of the EPA, effective as of July 6th, because I thoroughly expect to be indicted by July 7th. No, I added that part. It is extremely difficult for me to cease serving you in this role, first, because I count it a blessing to be serving you in any capacity, but also because of the transformative work that is occurring. However, the unrelenting attacks on me personally, my family, are unprecedented and have taken a sizable toll on all of us. My poor wife, who had to struggle so hard to find a job that would pay her at least $200,000 a year, who didn't get that Chick-fil-A franchise that we have long yearned for, The toll cannot be calculated. Because we didn't get it, so we're not going to have to be hiding any income. No, I added all that part in it. A toll on all of us. My desire in service to you has always been to bless you as you make important decisions for the American people. I believe you are serving as president today because of God's providence. I believe that same providence brought me into your service. I pray, as I have served you, that I have blessed you and enabled you to effectively lead the American people. Thank you again, Mr. President, for the honor of serving you, and I wish you Godspeed in all that you put your hand to. Things that you put your hand to. If you'd like, I will put my hand to you most anywhere you'd like. I added that part too. Your faithful friend, Scott Pruitt. Holy. He wants a date to the prom or something, doesn't he? You understand now why I read it. You can't just make this shit up. Silent R. Lamar says, no jail for Pruitt unless he's found with a dead white girl or a nude young boy. There will be no jail time. Sorry, he's a Republican. Oh, I know. He's probably not even within the purview of Bob Mueller's investigation. Ron in Raleigh says, well, hey, count your lucky stars. At least the Cuyahoga River's not on fire again. Yet. Yet. Because there's some other opportunities out there. Oh, yes, there are. Some real dandy opportunities. I mean, goodness gracious. Just think about what's already been done in terms of what happens here in Appalachia. This might be a good time to examine some science that came out. You remember the Deepwater Horizon disaster? Yeah, in the Gulf of Mexico. Well, there's been some science done about that. Some researchers got samples of sediment in 2014 from shipwrecks that were scattered up to 150 kilometers, that's 93 miles, from the spill site. They wanted to see how microbial communities had changed. Close to the source of the massive, disastrous outpouring of oil, there were a couple of shipwrecks, a German U-boat and a 19th century wooden sailing vessel, and the scientists found oil residue on both. Leela Hamdan, microbial ecologist at the University of Southern Mississippi, lead author of the study, said, at the sites closest to the spill, biodiversity was flattened. There were fewer types of microbes. This is a cold, dark environment, and anything you put down there will be longer lasting than oil on a beach in Florida. It's premature to imagine that all the effects of the spill are over and remediated. She continued saying, we rely heavily on the ocean, and we could be looking at potential effects to the food supply down the road. deep-sea microbes regulate carbon in the atmosphere and recycle nutrients. I'm concerned there will be larger consequences from this sort of event. Mm-hmm. Moreover, the study indicates that those microbes are the building blocks of life in the deep ocean, and they got hammered, and not in a good way. It was a week or two ago when Geezer Disgustus signed another one of those executive orders that that Republicans used to rail against Barack Obama about. And basically, it was another one of those damnatio memoriae moments, because it reversed a previous executive order from Barack Obama. That executive order... That executive order created the National Ocean Council. The purpose of the National Ocean Council was to ensure the protection, maintenance, and restoration of the oceans and the Great Lakes. Well, the National Ocean Council doesn't exist anymore. Nope. Not at all. But it tickled the hydrocarbon executives and Republicans and polluter lobbyist groups. It tickled them better than a feather would have, among other things. It's going to make things a lot more interesting for the areas that have already been opened up to drilling, like the Arctic. And using the same old tired phraseology, the managing director of the National Ocean Policy Coalition, which is actually just a bunch of oil and gas holes, a guy named Jack Belcher said, "A significant cloud of uncertainty for business has been removed." Yeah, because up until they weren't certain if they were just going to be able to spill oil anywhere they wanted to and get away with it. And then, since we're talking about the EPA, and this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, it might be beneficial to consider what the future of the EPA might be. Because this one's a real Lulu. We've all heard of the Heartland Institute before. Another gang of polluting thugs. Well, they've come up with what they think is a right smart idea. Oh yeah. What they want to do, and they've had the idea since 2014, but they brought it back to the top of their page because they think it's actually got a fighting chance now. They want to get rid of, like you're going to be surprised by this, they want to get rid of the EPA altogether. And instead, what they want is a committee of the 50 states comprised of the environmental protection agencies of all 50 states. It would basically wipe out 80% of the EPA's budget. And instead of having 15,000 staffers at the EPA, the new organization would have 300. And here, this, and most of you'll understand why before I even have to say it. The headquarters of the Environmental Protection Agency would be moved from Washington, D.C. to Topeka, Kansas. You know, Kansas. The home of Chuck and Dave and all the other nasty little cokes. This idea was hatched by some guy named Jay Lehr, L-E-H-R. He holds the position at the Heartland Institute of Science Director. He's the Heartland Institute's Mr. Spock. If Mr. Spock was, like, entirely obsessed with money and not at all with science. According to Jay Lehr, today, EPA is all but a wholly owned subsidiary of liberal activist groups. What a lying sack of shit Jay Lehr is. If the EPA was even remotely a wholly owned subsidiary of liberal activist groups, I wouldn't hear mountains exploding. I wouldn't be able to find any buried streams. We wouldn't have more than 1,000 dead hillbillies in mountaintop removal counties every year. And meanwhile, by the way, in case you were wondering, the EPA political staff is basically just a revolving door from the pollution industry. And yeah, Scott Pruitt is mixed up in that, too, because he's got long, deep, and dear ties to the Heartland Institute. Back when he was worrying about climate change, he asked the Heartland Institute to give him a list of names of folks who would challenge scientists if there was ever a debate about climate change. He likes the Heartland Institute so much, Scott Pruitt does. He did this. We'll get there in a minute.
I really appreciate the great courage that they exhibited during the last round of storms that took place this year. The partnership between the city of Houston, the state of Texas, and the federal government was outstanding. And the folks of Texas showed great fortitude. And our prayers continue with the folks there in the state of Texas. To the folks there at the Heartland Institute, we want to celebrate what's been going on this last year with respect to the changes that have taken place in Washington, D.C. Think back to November 8th of last year. The lack of optimism, the concern about where we were heading as a country, and think about where we are today. There's great optimism across the country because of President Trump's leadership and those that are leading across the country to get tremendous change with respect to regulatory reform. And just to update you a little bit on what we've been doing, we've been providing clarity, regulatory reform in areas that matter. We've withdrawn the Clean Power Plan, and we're providing
Certainty feels about
clarity
that.
There. We've withdrawn the Waters of the United States rule, that very terrible rule that created uncertainty across the marketplace, puddles and dry creek beds.
It wasn't just a terrible rule. It was a very terrible rule. I mean, there's terrible rules, and then there's the Waters of the United States rule. And there were poor polluters out there that were just absolutely swimming in uncertainty. I mean, they didn't hardly know whether to shit or yodel. They were so uncertain. There's that uncertainty again. That's what they plead every time they find a regulation they don't like. Well, you know, this rule that says we can't just poison people whenever we want to, that creates a lot of uncertainty in the industry is what it does. Yeah, right, yeah, yeah. I didn't get a rump.
all across this country being determined a water of the United States exceeding the power of Washington, D.C. And that's fundamentally what I'd like to emphasize to you, is that Washington has become way too consequential in the lives of Americans across the country. And the president was elected to change that. And we've been changing that here at the EPA. So regulatory reform is happening. But beyond that, we're changing attitudes here. You know, the attitude before we arrived said that you can't be about growth and jobs and also being a good steward of the environment. That's inaccurate. That's a false narrative. We've reduced those pollutants we regulate under the Clean Air Act by over 65% since 1980, and we've grown our GDP. So this country's always been about jobs and growth and environmental stewardship. And so we're changing the attitude, we're engaging in regulatory reform, and we're making sure that we get accountability across the country with respect to how we do business at this agency.
And remember, this guy's a Christian. We didn't do a whole lot of prayer meeting Wednesday stuff last night, so I'll just point out that, yes, Scott Pruitt is a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian. And that's how he's able to lie like that, because when he goes to bed at night, he says, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord, my soul to keep. I've been lying all day long. But don't hold against me. Hold it against me. Because you forgive me all my wrongs. Amen.
So I want to say to you at the Heartland Institute, thanks for what you're doing to advance energy. Thank you for what you're doing to advance natural resources. We've been blessed immensely as a country. To whom much is given, much is required. And when you have
Yeah, and I tell you what, we've given much. We've given 2,000 miles of streams, given 500 mountains. Only thing is, folks in Appalachia don't have that much to give. To whom little has been given, much will be required. There we go. That's the way it plays.
Tremendous natural resources, from coal to natural gas to oil, to generate electricity in a very cost-effective way. We should celebrate that and be good stewards. And that's something we ought to embrace. And so we're getting back to the basics here at the agency. We're doing our job the right way. We're approaching it with a new attitude and a freshness of attitude.
And brand new fountain pens and a big old tens of thousands of dollars cone of silence, because I'm afraid somebody's listening into my stuff and might hear all the dirty shit that I say. God bless America. Yes. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? No, not really. No, me neither. But to go back to, correction coming from Lee in New York, Mr. Spock is not at all like a lobbyist. You're probably thinking about Quark of Deep Space Nine or almost any other Ferengi. That's true. I'm surprised I haven't gotten a Ferengi Rules of Acquisition email yet. But no, the guy that we get in the interim, who I wouldn't be surprised if he gets nominated just to go on and be the administrator, is, he's not inspiring. Andrew Wheeler. Andrew Wheeler was confirmed as the number two, and boy is he ever, at EPA. Among other things, just in case you were wondering, no, Andrew Wheeler was not recently a coal miner or a roughneck on a drilling rig or anything. Oh, no, God. He's a lobbyist. Of course he is. He's a Jim Dandy. Let's check in with Andrew Wheeler, shall we? He worked on the Senate Committee of Environment and Public Works, where he was majority staff director and minority staff director and chief counsel, all under Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma. Remember Senator Snowball? Yeah, that one. He spent more than 10 years trying to make sure that things weren't done to protect people from the predatory practices of the energy industry. He's been paid by Archer Daniels Midland for strategic advice and counseling. I don't think that's counseling like when we think of counseling, like somebody has to go to counseling. Well, now, you know, we've got some issues to work through regarding you and your mother, Andrew. No. He was a registered lobbyist for Bears Head Liquid Natural Gas Corporation. Registered lobbyist for Energy Fuels Resources, Inc. He worked for Feger Baker Daniels, LLP, as a lawyer and a consultant. General Mills, Growth Energy, Insurance Auto Auctions, Inc., International Paper, and here's the big one, Murray Energy. You remember Murray Energy, Bob Murray, the guy who forced his workers to stand behind Bishop Willard Romney and serve as stage props for him. The guy who sued John Oliver and got his ass handed to him. Is this yours? Mm-hmm. Back when Andrew Wheeler was with Murray Energy, they got so busted they wound up having to pay out millions of dollars in fines for poisoning the water in three different states. What did they poison it with? Well, come on. Coal slurry, of course. Oh, yeah. He hosted fundraisers for senators prior to his nomination so that he could get an idea of what his chances were. The Union of Concerned Scientists says of Andrew Murray, unlike Pruitt, Wheeler worked for the EPA early in his career, and he's played key roles in congressional oversight of the agency and its budget, making him a formidable opponent with intimate knowledge of the agency's programs and regulations. He's got plenty of money, and so he's probably not going to be quite as venal, might not be out there trying to get a Chick-fil-A franchise for the little administratrix, and probably won't be sending people from his staff out looking for lotion. In the name of Jesus, I gotta have some lotion. Right? No, this guy's competent, and that's what's terrifying. In a way, it presents a little microcosmic picture of some of the stuff we've talked about, should Donald Trump not be president anymore, and you wound up with President Pence. You know, Mike Pencilneck Geek spent several years in the Congress and was the governor of the state of Talibandiana. You remember back when they enacted their anti-gay legislation? Remember Memories Pizza? Yeah. But we've wondered if it should happen that Donald Trump wasn't president anymore, if we might be in worse shape simply because Mike Pence actually understands a little more about how government works. Well, that's exactly the case with Andrew Wheeler. And it might be a little bit of a test case, if you know what I mean. So, keep your eyes and ears peeled. I mean, he got $3 million working as a lobbyist for Murray Energy. It ain't chicken feed. I don't think he's going to have to buy a used mattress. Ooh! You know, it's just, ooh! Well, mother likes it when they're kind of sunk in the middle there. Arnold says, you know, Pruitt's resignation letter would have been far less embarrassing if he had just blown Trump. Yeah, meanwhile, back in the email, Irish Dave says, so are you saying Wheeler won't rub the lotion on his skin? I think he's got a different set of interests, Dave. And that could very well be dangerous. But there's one more story out there. And it's so monumentally stupid that it could only come from the thin gray spirochete hollowed settlings that slosh around between his ears and pass for Trump's brains. You may recall that he was here a couple of nights ago at the Greenbrier. You may recall that there was a dummied up crowd sent from the VA to be welcoming and worshipful of him at the Greenbrier. So in the remarks that he made, and I saw them, I'm not going to do it to you. I mean, he took the podium and name-checked a whole bunch of pro golfers, and it was just, it was a little weird. But then again, everything he says is a little weird. But he knew where he was. He was in West, almost level West by Cold Trump, Virginistan, the second Trumpiest state in the Union. And so he knew he had to say something good about coal. You might want to grab the hockey puck for this one. He explained how it was that coal was better than oil or gas. You'd like to think that maybe the oil and gas guys were going, what? But they weren't. They know what the gig is. Next time he has to go talk in an oil state, he'll talk about how it's better than coal. Speaking to the assembled maggots, he said, you know, you bomb a pipeline, that's the end of the pipeline. With coal, that stuff is indestructible. Which is an interesting word to use in regard to an organic solid hydrocarbon whose entire purpose is to be burned. Indestructible. And it's coming back, coal is, for another reason. National security. And your governor knows very well, and your senator knows very well what that means with coal. You know, you bomb a pipeline, that's the end of the pipeline. With coal, that stuff is indestructible. At which point, the maggots just clapped and clapped and laughed. You can move it around on a truck. You can dump it at the plant. You can do whatever the hell you can rain on top of it for a long time. Right, Jim? It can rain like crazy. You can do whatever you want.
snow, sleet, wind. You just dump it. It's there. You hit those pipelines, they're gone, and that's the end of it. You're saying, man, we better go out and start cutting some lumber. More maggot laughter. So for national security purposes, I don't think people talk about it enough. Coal. That's two paragraphs. We're an hour into the program. I could spend the next two deconstructing that madness. Yeah, you can just dump it. And you can rain on it. And you can wash the toxins and the poisons into the groundwater, where families with wells tap into the water table and drink coal poisoned water and wind up living in little neighborhoods where five, six houses side by side all have somebody in their home, each home develop a form of brain cancer that occurs only once in 100,000 people in the general population, but five people side by side get it and die. You can do whatever you want. It's just, you can do whatever you want with coal when you're famous. They just let you. You can grab them by the bituminous. Is it just me, but if you dropped a bomb on a big stop, not saying that anybody should, but if you dropped a big bomb on a big old stockpile of coal, you reckon it would burn? Now, see, Brother Deacon Asa says, I'm thinking Trump was inciting the maggots to bomb the pipelines. No other way to interpret that. And then we'll blame the MS-13 Antifa. You can move it around on trucks. Because nobody's ever bombed a truck. Nobody's ever hit a truck with a missile. I mean, those were just faked videos from the Iraq War of precision-guided smart bombs hitting Iraqi trucks. But the maggots just laughed and clapped and cheered. Because he was saying good things, nice things, about their sacred religion. Fuck Jesus. They worship coal. Yes, they do. Bless their hearts. God love them. They can't help it. Sheesh. So, that's a start for this thorn in the side Thursday. Oh, yes, it is. And we'll take a little break. Again, there's a $25 challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralph's. If somebody matches it, Ralph's will throw in another $25. That'd get us down to $465 to go for fundraising in what is shaping up to be a rough, rough month. So, there we are. There's a lot more fun stuff to deal with on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, and maybe even something outrageously funny, because we probably need that. And we'll probably get to the best part of it. The phone line is open, however. Area code 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. And, of course, toll-free from Mexico or Canada or the United States, 844-843-4676, and Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet you can get around the firewall, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N,
C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Bob Kincaid Horn. So, let's take a break and see which direction the program is going to take us this evening. I consider it our good fortune that we've managed to stay on the air this long, because the thunder's been rolling the entire time. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
The men who were there, and she passed up the dock on the wide Delaware. Then the ship ran aground and the oil got away, and they did not report the big spill on that day. It was hundreds of thousands of gallons galore, stretching 32 miles down the Delaware shore. There were geese and the marshes out looking for food. They got stuck where they stood in the oncoming crude. And it's oil, oil, drifting to the sea. Oil, oil, don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. In the well-charted waters of the Nantucket shores was a ship run aground full of oil, we were told. In a week's worth of rough winter weather and waves, the boat started cracking and it could not be saved. It was 7.6 million gallons this time. Consider the danger and think of the crime as it poured out a slick stretching into the tide. Over 100 miles, yes, it came deep, it came wide, and it's oil. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. There's talk of some writing found in the ship's log saying one of the helmsman's unfit for his job. And the ship's gyro compass was 6 degrees shy. Their charts were outdated, but they tried to get by. And you know it's oil. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Yeah. Now both of these ships, like a great many more, got registered in through Liberian doors. Inspections are quick and regulations are few. Just sign on the line and go find you a crew, yes. One of these ships was the Olympic Games. The Argo Merchant was the other one's name. Well, it's sad, but it's true. Things got worse for the seas. So I ain't even mentioned Amoco Cadiz. Amoco Cadiz, between England and France. The big super tanker out there taking its chance. With his 100,000 black tons of the slime, Amoco Beans spilled the most of all times. Yes, you know it's oil, oil. Man, it's creeping in the sea. Oil, oil. Oh, don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Now down in the Gulf, east of Mexico way, there's something gone wrong, so the papers all say. And Mexican oil well is leaking its goo. They say it's the worst that things have ever come to. Yes, it's gallons of sludge, 60 million and more. It's cruising and oozing towards many a shore. Yes, things have got bad, but they'll probably get worse. If you can't drink the oil, oh, you might die of thirst. Because it's oil, it's oil. And it's creeping in the sea. Oil, oil. Don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Yeah!
You know, whenever you're talking about the hydrocarbon Borgias of the oil and gas industry, particularly the oil industry, you can't go wrong bumping out with Steve Forbert's classic, The Oil Song. You just can't. It is 12 minutes past the hour, and well, let's run over to the phones and check in with Kevin over in Colorado Springs. Hey, Kevin.
Hello, Bob. Colorado Springs of the second warmest June on record in June of 2012 was the warmest ever. But they still deny global warming for some strange reason.
It's sunspots, Kevin. Sunspots. It's all just sunspots. We know that.
Yep. It just comes around and, you know. Someday we'll have a June that's the coldest on record here soon.
I mean, it's just
I just, and when I listen to you talk about Pruitt, it's amazing to me how these people feel so privileged. I'm flabbergasted by it in some senses, not about Pruitt, but the privilege so many of the conservatives feel and think. I don't know. It's really, I'm more worried about the future now than I was. And by the way, back when I was growing up in the 1970s, if you told me that we'd be where we are in 2018, I wouldn't have believed you. I just couldn't imagine a world back then that would be sliding toward fascism like it is. I don't know. I wish I could say because I'm getting older, I'm getting grumpier, and that's why I feel that way, but it's not. You and I are both at roughly the same age, and I can remember a time where, you know, before Reagan, we felt like there was hope for the future, and even with Reagan, I didn't feel this way with Reagan and Bush 1, but after Bush 1, I think that's where it really started to go downhill. It started with Reagan, but, you know.
Oh, and I did. I tuned into Morning Conniption today, and dear God. Joe was into his full-on Reagan hagiography.
Oh,
Oh, it was. It was pathetic.
Well, you know, they like to believe it's morning in America, and with Trump, I guess they think it's dawn in America. By the way, speaking of that,
well, no, see with Trump, Kevin, it doesn't matter if it's morning, noon, or night. Anytime is it's great in America now.
Yep. Yep. And it, that girl that climbed the Statue of Liberty yesterday.
Yeah.
Man, were they slamming her. I don't know if they were on Morning Joe because I'm not up that early in the morning, but.
I thought she was gutsy as hell. There's a photograph of her.
Yeah.
Sandra sent it along to me. I saw it over on Twitter. Of her just sitting there on the statue with those hot pink tennis shoes. Looked like she didn't have a care in the world.
Yep. And but yet, the response to it, did you catch any of that where they talked about the response to her being on the Statue of Liberty? They had to call out the emergency response team, and this lieutenant was on there saying how she was combative at first, and they finally developed a rapport with her. And I'm thinking, she was just there protesting what's happening with the kids down at the border. You know, talk about your civil disobedience. What was combative about that, climbing up the Statue of Liberty to protest that?
Any protest is combative now in Trump America. Any yeah. protest that is not Nazis.
Yep.
Because I've got a story handy
right.
here.
He was very gutsy, and more power to her. I fear, I haven't heard the actual charges against her. I know I saw a blurb on the news between running around today, where she was facing quote unquote multiple charges. I can't imagine any other charge, but. Disorderly conduct and maybe trespassing, but I'm sure they're going to think up a good felony charge somewhere along the way.
Oh, yeah, but contrast that, Kevin, with the following. Going back to Charlottesville last year, almost a year ago now, Frontline, acting in partnership with ProPublica, has done some research on one of the Nazi protesters at Charlottesville, someone that they saw beating on a woman, knocking her to the ground, and wrapping his hands around her throat, trying to choke her out. The guy's name is Michael Micellis. Now, the right wing, as Kevin notes, the right wing is absolutely apoplectic over a protester climbing the Statue of Liberty. You know, something that actually took some courage, bravery. Meanwhile, Michael Micellis is a doctoral student in a PhD engineering program at UCLA. And he's the one who was seen and identified hitting and choking a woman, and he also participated in the Berkeley, California fascist uprising. As Frontline and ProPublica describe it, in video shot in Charlottesville, a bearded husky man is seen in a red Make America Great Again hat with his hands wrapped in tape that came in handy for the brawling that occurred that day. During one encounter, the unidentified man in the red hat pushed an African-American protester to the ground and began pounding on him, video of the episode shows. Moments later, another known RAM member, the name of the organization is RAM. It's an acronym. The Rise Above Movement. They're out of Southern California. They make plain that they despise Muslims, Jews, and immigrants.
A known RAM member choked and bloodied a pair of female counter-protesters. A possible RAM member also had turned up in a video shot during hours of combat at a Trump rally in Berkeley as well. Wearing protective goggles to ward off pepper spray, the man fought alongside RAM members, wrestling one protester to the ground and punching others. And ProPublica and Frontline were able to discern that the man in question was 29-year-old Michael Macellus of the PhD program in UCLA's Aerospace Engineering program. Here's the thing. No charges have been filed, despite the video evidence. And the man is an employee of Northrop Grumman and holds a security clearance. Really? One of the fascist criminals from Charlottesville and Berkeley holds a security clearance and not a damned thing has been done about it. On the other hand, the full weight of the law will descend upon the woman who climbed the Statue of Liberty. How's that? Just remember, IOKIYAR, IOKIYAM, it's okay if you're a maggot. When Frontline showed up at the guy's home in Lawndale, California, asked him if he was Michael, and he said, "I don't know anything about what happened in Charlottesville. I think you got the wrong guy." And got in his car and drove away. Several current and former employees at Northrop Grumman told ProPublica and Frontline that Michael Macellus has received a security clearance to work in a computer modeling and simulation group within Northrop's aerospace division. That means that the Office of Personnel Management has investigated his background and then they send their findings to a unit inside the DOD who makes a final determination on whether he should have a clearance. Having the security clearance provides access to classified information. Sounds like there's a worm in the apple. Over at the Defense Department, public affairs officers had no comment. Office of Personnel Management said, nah, you need to talk to Northrop Grumman about that. And Northrop Grumman said, huh? What? I can't hear you. God, sorry, the water's running and I'm washing my... The entire corporate governance, we're all washing our hair. On the other hand, it does appear that they are aware of what Michael Macellus did in Charlottesville. They are aware of his affiliation with RAM. The Rise Above movement. Anti-Semitic, anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant. Violent. And nothing so far has happened. By way of background, RAM showed up spring of 2017. Well, no, it says last spring, so maybe spring of 2018. And they are now recognized as one of the violent groups in the resurgent white supremacist scene. They train in boxing and martial arts. and they've been documented in a number of melees. They were founded early 2017 by Robert Rundo of Queens. He did 18 months in prison for stabbing a rival gang member 6 times during a street fight in 2009. Among other things, he recruited followers from the Orange County and San Diego chapters of something called Hammer Skin Nation. That's the single largest Nazi skinhead gang in the entire country. Isn't it just damned interesting how Julius Geezer can fulminate and sweat and strut and fret his hour upon the stage about MS-13 or ISIS, or, and yet never a word, never a damn word about, oh, Hammer Skin Nation that's openly violent, or the Rise Above movement. Yeah. It's enough to make you think that he actually kind of likes Nazis. Kinda. For my part, you'd have a hard time convincing me that he doesn't. Rise Above asks James, like grease, pus, and flatulence? The very. Meanwhile, let's check in with Teresa Okumu, who went before a judge this afternoon. As Kevin alluded to, the National Park Service said they had to evacuate 4,000 visitors from Liberty Island as a precaution. She's been charged with trespass and disorderly conduct. I would never dare to speak for you. But it was pretty impressive from where I stand. We're about at the halfway mark this evening. I can announce, and thank you very kindly to Charlene. Here's $25 to meet the challenge, and I'll chain along another $25 if somebody else will throw in $25. Am I making sense? Charlene says, I drove home from Boston today with a broken air conditioner, rotten traffic. I know, I'm a weather wimp when it comes to the heat. No, you're not. Oh, no, you're not, Charlene. It's finally dropped below 85 degrees here in the studio, and I'm on bottle of water number 4. So, no, you're not a weather wimp. Hot is hot is hot is hot. So there it is. Ralph's challenge has been met. That means Ralph's is going to throw in another 25. Now, if somebody will meet Charlene's 25... then Charlene will throw in an extra 25. And unless I've got that completely wrong, that would take us down to $390 in fundraising to go, and that's pretty darned important. So thank you, Charlene, and hopefully there's somebody out there that wants to add another $25 into the mix and help us chase the lupine pest off the off the Horn's front porch. Thank you, Charlene, and thank you, Ralphs. And I know why we lost Kevin now. Because the Frontier went out. You know, one of the two lines we've got coming in here. But it appears to be back now. Kevin, if you'd like to try back. Meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh says, subject line, weird. Does the name Ernst Röhm mean anything to you? Do these guys happen to wear brown shirts? The name Ernst Röhm means plenty to me. He was the head of the SA. Until he wasn't anymore. The brown shirts of historical infamy. I don't know that they wear brown shirts, but they sure do have the attitude down to a science. Now, while we see if Kevin's going to call back, because it's been received with such popularity. Let's check in with correspondence from the front line in the Second Civil War. Oh, thank you, Henry. Thank you very, very kindly. Henry has answered Charlene's challenge. So that's awesome. Thank you, Henry. Thank you very, very kindly. So that means, we're down from... We're down to $390 to go in fundraising, and that's amazing and more helpful than... Well, it's what keeps the program going. Plain and simple. And the more we knock it down, the less we've got to count on a Friday on the front porch human-made miracle tomorrow. So there's $390 to go. Thank you very much for helping take some of that down. And, you know, if that goes down 50 more bucks, then that's an entire day's fundraising we've raised, which is awesome. Let's go back and check in before we go back to the Second Civil War. We've got Kevin again now because the Internet came back up. Hey, Kevin.
Yes, the Second Civil War, Alex Jones. Man, that air assault yesterday was... awesome by the progressives. You know, what amazes me is some people believe the people like Alex Jones.
Do you really think so, Kevin? I mean, sometimes my mind rebels at the idea that there are people out there sufficient to. That you don't think people are just tuning in for the comic value of it. Because I mean, there's some comic value there.
Oh yeah, there's that, but there are people that believe him. I've seen him talk about it. He used to be on one of the late night talk shows all the time, talking about the various things that are going to happen and how the Obama is going to take over. You know, blah blah blah.
The Illuminati.
Yep.
The Bohemian Grove.
Yep, Bohemian Grove, and, you know, oddly enough, he never seems to get caught at Bohemian Grove, except I guess one time they did kind of escort him off the premises, but he still shows up every year and no one stops him, which ought to tell you something about the whole thing to begin with, but I don't think he believes it. I'm fairly sure it's just a money-making thing for him. And that's the sad part, but there are people that believe him just as they believe these religious hucksters that are on late-night TV. Send in a $1,000 donation and God will bless you and give you $10,000 or $100,000.
I mean, but Kevin, have you ever met any of these people?
Yes and no. Yeah, I have seen them. Nobody that I've been a friend of, kind of thing. I've heard them talk. And I have heard them talk. And
I mean, what would you do? What would you do if you were, let's say you're just sitting around in your neighbor's living room and they've got Alex Jones on and they say, yeah, this man's the smartest man in America. He really knows what's going on.
Yep.
What would you do, Kevin? I mean, would you just hoot like a barn owl?
Yeah. But you can't. It's pointless to get in an argument with them or even try to dissuade them because they're so brainwashed is the word I use that, you know, you can't dissuade them from saying, like the people that believe in the Illuminati and those things, and it's all a conspiracy. Everything's a conspiracy, you know. Nothing just happens out of random chance.
So let me—I mean, this is just your lay opinion, just my lay opinion. But anybody who takes somebody like Alex Jones to heart, are they mentally healthy?
No.
I mean, can we make that broad a statement that if you think Alex Jones is telling the truth, you are probably mentally ill?
Yeah, well, I could. I'm not a doctor and don't play one on TV, but no, I think they're mentally ill and maybe developing paranoid tendencies.
Silent R. Lamar just said, all caps, no, Bob, there are people who are that stupid. And yes, I have met those people. And I mean, you know, if you're walking on the street, and I mean, this has happened. I mean, it happened in a little town in Alabama last year. I've seen it happen more times than I can count on the streets of D.C. And you encounter somebody who is, you know, screaming at their shoelaces, and I'm not making fun of mental illness. You understand, right?
Right. Yeah.
But you kind of obviously know that there's some sort of an obvious pathology or an obvious problem at work there. But what about the guy who, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to just make it all about guys, but I would guess that the vast majority of the people who buy into Alex Jones are probably males.
White,
yeah. But what happens when one of those guys who takes Alex Jones seriously is your, oh, I don't know, is your doctor or your postmaster?
Yep.
Or the guy who puts the meat through the grinder to make hamburger at your local grocery store? I mean, what happened? I mean, would you go to that? Would you ever buy hamburger at that grocery store again? Would you go to that doctor?
No.
Would you go out of your way to go to a different post office?
Probably. I really try to insulate myself now, Bob, with people who are like-minded. And I don't like doing that, but it's self-protection. And because I do feel like it's pointless to argue with the people that are the true believers in Trump and people like Alex Jones. And, you know, I can't deal with them. But I will tell you, I dealt with a number of paranoid schizophrenic patients and friends of friends, and some of these people that believe in Alex Jones and spread his quote unquote gospel. Yeah.
So, I mean, look, you know where I live. You know what it's like around here. It's nothing for me to run across somebody who's, you know, got their little maggot hat on, or and you know, they'll say, you know, he's going to bring back Coe. Yep. And you go, well, you know, good for you. Good luck with all that. You know, I disagree. And you move on. And you go, eh, maggot. But when they take that, but what I'm getting at is that, you know, there's a next step beyond that. When they say, yeah, and I could never vote for that killery, that Hitlery, because of what she done to them poor little children down in that basement of that pizza parlor.
Yep.
You know, that's the moment where you go, ah, fuck it, it's all over, goodbye, don't ever want to hear from you again, don't speak to me, don't breathe in my direction.
Because of the cognitive dissonance that's required for them to believe the conspiracy about Hillary and the kids in the basement, when right in front of their eyes, kids at the border are being taken away from their parents, and they totally deny that. That's all fake news and all made-up stuff.
Oh, by the way, speaking of the news and the press, you did catch the story, I trust, about the Trump administration declining to order federal flags lowered to half-mast for the murdered journalists in Annapolis?
Well, no, not today. I've been running around all day, so I haven't heard much news.
Yeah, officials in Maryland asked the Trump administration to order federal flags flown at half-mast for the murdered journalists in Annapolis. And the Trump regime just said, fuck off, no.
Yeah, because journalists are the enemy now.
And then yesterday, during 4th of July observances at the White House, guests of Julius Geezer stood on the lawn and laughed and pointed at the journalists covering them and yelled, fake news.
Yep. Yep, that's what's scary to me, is, you know, to describe how frightening it is that journalism is being looked at in the way it is. News media as it is now, but now any journalist that reports anything negative about anything doing with Trump is disregarded as fake news by them. And yeah, Pruitt resigned today, but Pruitt's letter there, you know, he was the victim, not the fact that he, you know, ordered those pins and did all that flying around on the government expense, the taxpayer expense, I should say. That wasn't a problem in his eyes. And that's, all of it just concerns me so much, but yet I'm in a position where, you know, I can't do much about it. One person can't do much about it. It's shows like yours, Malloy's, you know, that get the word out there, but in places where, like you're, where you're at, and in pockets of where I'm at, you know, there's so much around you that you kind of maintain a low profile because it's, again, for me, self-protection. Not that I'm scared to go out. It hasn't reached that point yet, but, you know, it could very well reach that point. If people know your political beliefs, you could be persecuted for them. my or whatever, and I hate to keep going on about it, but you get the feeling of what I'm trying to say is I'm truly scared for the future. But listening to you and Dr. Bill yesterday talking about education and critical thinking, that's the thing. Since you and I went to high school, Bob, when you were talking with Dr. Bill about that, I was thinking about both my government studies teacher and my history teacher in high school. They demanded, close to it anyway, critical thinking. My political science teacher didn't particularly preach either side of the aisle. He just demanded of you a little bit of critical thinking on your part to see for yourself where you stood. And nowadays, that isn't being taught. And it was a very good point, I think Dr. Bill made it, maybe it was you, about the online courses. They're cookie-cutter courses. And
well,
you were right.
Dr. Bill was much more forgiving about it. I just say they're baloney.
In a lot of cases, yeah. Because you don't get out, you don't do internships or clinicals or anything like that, and you can get your whole degree online without ever actually getting out in the field of study.
Well, not just that. I mean, basically what we're trying to foster with online education, Kevin, is autodidacticism. And I know that just sounds filthy, but it isn't. And some people, I mean, this country has given rise to some pretty impressive autodidacts. Ben Franklin, Mark Twain, Abraham Lincoln. Those are all people who were able to learn on their own and figure things out with very little help from anybody else.
Yep.
But it takes a really, really special person to be able to do that. And it's particularly difficult and unlikely when you realize that we're expecting it from people who have never really had to do much in the way of self-directed learning in the first place. I mean, here in this state, for instance, the rates of students going from high school to college, such as there are woefully unprepared for any sort of the rigors of an actual college existence. So, you know, with the rise of outfits like the University of Phoenix and some of these other degree mills, what you wind up with are people, like you said, who have never had any practical experience in the field, but are given, you know, what essentially, let's see, the lion needed courage. Oh, it was the scarecrow needed the brain. And, you know, you've got a brain. What you need is a diploma. Wasn't that it?
Yep.
Or a testimonial. Well, we're providing people with testimonials via online education that don't necessarily confer the skills necessary for whatever field that may be.
Yep.
And frankly, there's not a lot of learning to be had from multiple choice tests. And you can't learn a lot about what someone knows or doesn't know by multiple choice tests.
And still teachers in all 50 states are underpaid for the job they do. The teachers I knew growing up did a lot of home, off-the-clock work. When school was done, grading papers, that kind of thing. And, you know, yeah, we had our share of multiple choice tests, but there was a lot of essay stuff, too, that some teacher somewhere spent 4 hours of his or her night grading without being paid for it. And yet we don't value education. We don't value our teacher. It's like the teacher strike in West Virginia and the things that were said by the right about the teachers. And, you know.
But you know what? To be fair, and I'm not trying to piss anybody off if we got people listening in West Virginia. I was involved with Dr. Bill's program, his seminar program that was designed to teach teachers how to use primary source materials in instructing their children, their students. And we started out 1 year with like 60 people. You know how many people finished it? You know how many actual certificate-bearing teachers finished that program?
I'll take a guess, 15?
Less than 10,
wow.
Maybe a fewer less than 10. Because Dr. Bill was asking them to do real live, honest to God, scholarly work.
Yep.
That many of them had never been asked to do before in their lives. And I got to watch it in real time, and it was not impressive. Now, that's not me gooning on public education or public school teachers. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of education programs out there that are churning out people with education degrees as opposed to people with subject matter mastery.
Yep.
I wish it was otherwise, but it isn't.
Well, and that's almost happened. I don't know how you feel about it. That's almost happened in one generation, Bob. From the time you and I went to school to now, it has changed that dramatically in 40 years.
I was fortunate in that, I've kind of got a benchmark for it, because I graduated high school 5 months after Ronald Reagan became president.
Yep.
And I was able to see... because I had friends who were underclassmen, I was able to see it go downhill from there almost immediately.
Yep.
Because you got to remember, for years and years and years, decades perhaps, it has been an article of faith in the Republican Party platform, we have got to get rid of the United States Department of Education. We can't have a big federal government making our children learn things that they don't, that we don't want them to learn.
Yep.
And so, with the advent of Reagan, it can be seen. It becomes glaringly obvious. And I saw it early on, but I wasn't prepared for it, Kevin. And I was shocked when the first of our four children started into high school. And trying to be involved with, you know, their learning experiences. I'm like, well, what are y'all doing today? And I'd look through their textbooks, and it was, holy shit, what is this garbage? It was all pictures.
Yep.
And it was it was text of a font size that was that assumed that, I guess. They thought all the students were visually challenged. That's how they got them to be really thick books.
Yep. Yeah. There's a commercial I hear from time to time about a language learning program, and it starts out, you ever wondered why people in Europe speak multiple languages? And he makes the point, maybe it's because they used our program. And I'm thinking to myself when I hear that, no, it's because
they require you to learn a second language, at least a second language, in high school before you graduate.
Well, to a degree of fluency, and it's not just high school, Kevin. They start in grade school.
Yep.
I mean, if you're a German student or a French student, you start learning English or, you know, Spanish or Russian. And usually it is. It's two or three languages on top of your own. For a variety of reasons. One, you're very close to people who speak a different language. Two, they know, because it's been scientifically proven, that there's something about language learning that expands the learning abilities in other fields.
Yep.
Well, It was like water over Helen Keller's hands when I sat down in ninth grade in Latin 1.
Yep.
I learned more about the English language in Latin 1 than I learned in English.
Yep. And it's the same way, if you remember, I don't know if you were, you might not have been old enough to remember this, back when they tried to move the United States to liters instead of gallons, the measurement system, the whole measuring system, which is the European way of measuring, which is much more accurate than our system. But oh, the howls of protest from Americans. You can't do this. We're Americans. We don't want to learn it. And I've never forgotten that. I was probably 13, 14, 15, somewhere in there. And I was just shocked at how outraged people were about that. Because, measuring in liters instead of gallons is much more accurate, so on and so forth. But we're Americans, guys, and by God, we're not going to change. And that kind of attitude permeates a lot of other things. I wouldn't say that someone that protested that is a racist, but that's the same attitude that people have about quote-unquote foreigners here in America coming and ruining America, when virtually everyone except the Native Americans are foreigners. Your ancestors, my ancestors, all came from a different continent, much less a different land. But now, the foreigners are moving in, and we can't have that. And that white anxiety is...
Yeah, if only we could convince the Norwegians to come over.
Well, Bob, last week, I don't know if you've heard about the big fire out here in Colorado. It was called the Spring Fire. It was up to 100,000 acres, and we finally got rain last night. So that really got it under control finally. But it was arson, alleged arson anyway. And the man that allegedly started it was an illegal alien from Denmark. I don't hear anybody screaming about how the guy was here illegally. And he had been here illegally for something like 10, 15 years. I don't know how long, but it had been a long, long time. But he was from one of them good countries that we want coming over here. And he's the one that started this spring fire. Sat there, and once he started it, sat there in his truck watching it burn. And they literally caught him sitting there in his truck watching it burn.
Oh, that's a goddamn pyromaniac, isn't it, Kevin?
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. you know, they caught him with the, I'll say allegedly, but they caught him with the materials and.
Going to be kind of hard for Trump to accuse him of being a member of MS-13, isn't it?
Oh.
God. What a, you know, as the Wicked Witch said, what a world, what a world, what a world.
Yeah. So, not much more I can say. I just wanted to vent a little because it's you know, for me, it's not getting scary for me in the sense of I'm scared about what's going to happen tomorrow, but for a generation or two down the line, I'm petrified because I agree with you. We're not going to get, it's not going to get better. And one day this nation is going to pay the same price Germany did in the 1940s for what they did. And I don't think we can stop it. I hope we can. But I'm like you. I don't think it can be stopped. And...
Well, like I said, these are conversations. We're at a point now where when it comes to fixing the United States, these are conversations we need to be having with 10-year-olds. And, of course, it would not be a bad idea to introduce 10-year-olds to the idea of civics and government at an early age, just
yep.
like languages. And to do it without bullshitting them. You know, that's another one of those essential problems. We bullshit children in the early grades.
Mm-hmm.
We teach them myths instead of realities. I mean, God Almighty, what was that? What's that one Texas textbook that says that African people came to America as workers and just decided to stay?
Yep.
Hello? I mean, God damn. Sorry. But,
well, that...
But I understand.
Columbus was a hero.
Yeah, you betcha.
He discovered America. You know.
Without ever setting foot on a continent. Yeah, I know. Oh God Almighty, Kevin, it's been a delightful conversation. I'm gonna pull it up short though because, I just got a note from Brother Deacon Gerald down in the Kanawha Valley saying that the radar down there is as red as a maggot hat. And I'm hearing I just got a message from him saying, yeah, that was a big old bump. That was a big old rumbler. And about 2 minutes later, it rumbled up here. I mean, 50 miles, yeah. You know, something like that. Right.
That's okay, because it's the same way here. We're having the same, not the same storms, but the same thing. So I've enjoyed the conversation, and I do want to say I really enjoyed the conversation you and Dr. Bill had yesterday.
Well, you know that what? He loves to engage in conversation. If you're, if you remember to turn him on at your mountain time, right?
Yep.
So that would be 11 a.m. Your time.
Yep.
Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. He loves taking calls, and he loves people who have questions about the finer points of this stuff. So don't hesitate and don't be shy.
I'll try. That's usually the time my helper gets here, and we're kind of catching up on stuff. But I will try to do that because, like I said, I really enjoyed that yesterday, and I don't think there's a time I've heard Bill talk that I haven't enjoyed it. So if he's listening, I appreciate it. So,
all right.
I'll let
you go
on
well,
that,
let
Bob.
Me. How are you feeling? How's your health?
Doing. My blood pressure, for some reason, has gotten high. I don't understand that. And if I've got the time, let me ask you this. Has anybody ever told you anything you can do to prevent a pancreas attack, pancreatitis?
Well, the only thing they ever say to me is, drink.
Yeah, well, that's...
And I'm like, well, okay, that's not an issue. I mean,
right, exactly. But that's
no. More than anything, I've figured it out on my own. Just a couple of things. you need to go over whatever medications you're on. You need to go over them very, very closely with your primary care physician in order to find out if there's a risk of that combination lighting up your pancreas.
Right, and that's why I'm so concerned, because it's only been in the last 2 or 3 weeks my blood pressure has been running high, even with medication. And my blood sugars have been running, while they're not real high, they've been running high. And I don't
you know,
want
the
like
other part, now, since mine seems to be tied in with my gallbladder and, you know, sort of a cross system, if I sit, I've become very, very leery, Kevin, of eating anything that's, you know, a high fat content. Because yep. The one thing that I did before the last onset was sit down and kind of abuse a plate of Italian sausages.
Yep.
And the next thing I knew, I was doubled over in pain. And I still have these moments where it feels like somebody's sticking a knife into my left side or a knife into my right side. And they're sharp enough that you go, whoa, you know, and you do one of those things. And Agnes goes, yep. What happened? And I said, oh, you know. But meds, fats, and yeah, booze, but.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
But I mean, you know, Malloy just passed a season in hell that they diagnosed as medication driven pancreatitis.
Wow.
Because yeah. He got bit by a spider, went to a walk in clinic, they gave him medicine for the spider, or whatever it was. And then he was doubled up in pain, and that was part of it, they think.
Huh.
So, you know, there you go.
Wow. Well, I will check in with you from time to time, because I'm a little bit concerned. I'm doing okay. I'm in good shape for the shape I'm in, but I don't want to get where I was a month ago, 2 months ago.
Yeah, I understand completely.
So, anyway, my best to the Horn family. I'll talk to you all later.
All right, you take care, Kevin. Bye now.
Thanks, Bob. Bye-bye.
That's our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. And if you do, because ever since my first bout with it, I've found out that apparently pancreatitis is a lot more common than I thought. If you take several medications, you might want to, you know, when you sit down with your primary care physician, if you're able to go to one, that's a good question to ask. You know, am I at risk of a pancreatic attack because of the combination of all these meds? And the other thing that I probably should have mentioned to Kevin is that triglyceride spikes, at least I've seen, triglyceride spikes will do the same thing. And so that's why I'm trying to get out and move around, walk around the heat, sweat a lot, do whatever, you know, because nothing knocks down triglycerides like exercise. So we've got that. Let's see here. Like I said, the warning is in order. Brother Deacon Gerald said it's getting nasty down in the Kanawha Valley, which means it'll get nasty here fairly shortly. So there's some things I need to do real quick. Like, one, thank you very kindly to our buddy Keith, and thank you very kindly to our buddy Silent R. Lamar. We have now lowered the fundraising goal to $330. And that's awesome. And James in Illinois has put a challenge on the table, another $25 challenge. And if someone will kindly meet that, then we will get it down below the $300 mark. If somebody will meet that challenge, we'll be at $280, which will be simply astonishing considering where we started this evening. So thank you, James. Thank you, Keith. And thank you very kindly to our buddy Silent R. Lamar, who also sent a note along when we were talking about educational issues and, you know, stupidity in America. The problem with America is Americans want to be told what is right. They don't want to learn on their own what is right. An example, today it's easier to do wrong than right. This is what we see today. We have more people doing wrong thinking it's right. The term good guys finish last is misunderstood. They don't understand finishing last and standing is better than finishing first on your back looking up. By the way, Ron and Raleigh reminds us, we did kind of sort of adopt the metric system a little. 2-liter soft drink bottles, 750-milliliter bottles of your favorite hooch. Liquid measure seems to be the only thing we adopted. Honest to God, and this ex parte, what did you think of the Expanse season finale? I haven't actually gotten there yet. I got interrupted by the pancreatic attack a couple of weeks ago, and well, I don't know. I may have watched it all and just don't remember it. But I've been overall pleased with the series. It's proceeded nicely, good character development, fantastic acting. But I need to go back and check and see if I watched the season finale. I presume it's one of those things where if you saw the finale, you knew it was a finale. But I do need to check in on that. True. Irish Dave says, I'm a-thinking you might ask your pharmacist that question, too, also about drug combinations. Synergistic effects are ignored at our peril. And, I mean, I learned that the hard way. I took metformin for years, and apparently it was one of the culprits in the troubles I developed. I'm not on it, and my blood sugar's fine. So, given that there is a risk of this program going away as a result of weather, and I'm sorry to constantly be talking about it, it's just silly that I have to. But this, you know, we have an incompetent power company. And if there was some way, if I thought for a minute that there was some way of actually succeeding with a crowdfunding campaign to take this program off the grid and just rely on solar, do it in a heartbeat. Coal River Mountain Watch just finished their solarization of the Judy Bond Center. And I'm so proud for them, I could bust. Because they have, for all intents and purposes, become able to look at Appalachian Power and go, ah! You know, with a certain digital gesture. So in the name of having a little bit of fun, because it has been so well received, yes, letters from the Second Civil War. My dear friend, I'm writing you and I hope this finds you well. As you may know, I've been enlisted in the Civil War General Jones spoke of the other day. The fighting is rough and the food is all vegan, of course, but we're in good spirits. General Soros has ordered our division to the capital to engage the Red Hats. We're severely outnumbered and our rations are low. Daily lattes are all but gone now, and if we're lucky, we get one a week. I fear the battle has turned the worst for us. My company has secured the downtown Starbucks for the time being, but the smell of citronella hangs heavy in the air, and I fear for the worst. We lost contact with B Company, who were charged with securing the Target store. And I've heard that C Company was wiped out at the Battle of Bowling Green while charging the Costco. I'm cold and lonely. Sometimes the only thing that keeps me going is the promise of that big protest check. I'll close for now and hope that one day soon we can talk about the battles we've won against the Red Hats. Sincerely, Private Gerald, A Company, 5th Libtard Division. Dear Josephine, the brave men here of the 12th Millennial Brigade have been passing time between battles, engaging in selfie drills, cooking fresh pots of Snapchat, and whittling hashtags. The Keurig was lost at the Battle of Cupertino, leading to mass chaos. Jedediah, we've trapped some MAGA supporters in KFC and are forcing them to watch Queer Eye, Pulse, and Modern Family. Their screams are unbearable. War is brutal. Please send a care package with kombucha and kale chips, not the barbecue ones. Yours, Hortense. Dear Mama, Daddy, and them, please give my final regards to Becky. I'm afraid I'll not be back to marry her as planned. See, the Reds captured our bookmobile and burned it in an orgy of destruction. Mama, you know we can't live without our books. Love, Vic. Oh, my beloved, I write again from Malheur Wildlife Refuge. Her emails suggested we escalate the siege by blasting NPR. NCOs Nye and Dyson expect Red Hats to surrender in exchange for snacks. Please send more pink yarn, as my hat's ears have frayed. Tread well. Dearest, we have plundered all the treasures of Fort Trayton. It has been callous and deliberate. Even the tin flue of the wood stove is stowed in my trunk. In 2 days, Bowling Green. And then I will return to your cold, lotionless arms. Scotty. Dearest sir, I have resorted to eating marshmallow fluff from the container. This war has robbed me of so many fluffernutters. The enemy has nuts. They fling peanut shells at us, hoping for anaphylaxis. War is difficult, but we continue to fight back. Dearest, our men run low on thoughts and prayers, but rejoice. The enemy has lost another battalion. We set fire to the fields to keep them at bay, but they merely walked through the flames, claiming it wasn't actually getting any warmer. Dearest Mother, Operation Kindle worked. We led and trapped 200 Red Hats in an LGBT bookstore. They set fire to the science section with them inside. They never screamed. They kept chanting, "Snowflakes owned," over and over. Madness. Your loving David. Dear Mummy and Daddy, we have hunkered down at the local Five Guys. Fortune smiled upon us as a handful of GOP sympathizers waved a white flag. They said they thought they were at the meeting location for women's reproductive health. Benjamin, the Red Hats had us bogged down for days until we finally heard the Rainbow Raiders were in the area. The Red Hats fled at the appearance of the LGBT troopers, citing reverse bigotry and fighting hate with hate as they ran. Dearest Clementine, I've discovered a spy amongst our new recruits. They attempted to correct someone's gender and complained about illegals receiving driver's licenses. We are feeding them fake news, which they ironically believe wholeheartedly. Dear family, I have lost my unit and stumbled upon sickly people muttering, "Lock her up." I fear the water here in Florida is the cause of this malaise. Please pray that I don't catch this disease. Your liberal son. Betrothed, we had just cleared for action against the SS Pruitt, a former research vessel of note hijacked by scoundrels, when she floundered. Her coal-fired boilers exploded, being augmented by shoddy travel receipts. A single gilded fountain pen remained. My darling, the suburban division of the Gay Dad Battalion is running on empty. The children are desperately low on fruit pouches, and eating our carb-heavy rations is not helping our pride diets. Dearest, it appears the Second Civil War has begun. I was in the park when the Red Hats were accosting a family of color for grilling. I stepped in and feigned familiarity with the family. The maggots were confused, and I'm now eating good barbecue. Letters from the Second Civil War. Note coming in from Todd in South Carolina. Subject line, "You damn Yankee. Thanks a load. Because of you and your American Civil War letters, I am now reporting to the hospital with a laugh-induced hernia. Despicable." Signed, H.T. I haven't had so much fun in ages. Unless that is to say that there's more fun to be had. And I'm kind of at sixes and sevens because we got a, you know, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and there's a lot of ugly shit to deal with. Another case of shopping while black in America. St. Louis, the location this time, as a man of color, who also happened to be a man of color with diabetes, walked into his local Walgreens, again with the Walgreens. What the fuck is going on there? You know, Starbucks had the common decency, I don't know how effective it was, but they had the common decency to shut down for a day so that they could teach people not to be such, or at least attempt to teach people not to be such racist assholes. Walgreens? Nah. Wesley Dozier has diabetes. Wesley Dozier is black. And he stopped at the Walgreens Monday night in the St. Louis area because he has an insulin pump. He's a brittle diabetic. And those things will eventually cause scarring, and Wesley Dozier had begun to deal with the scarring. And it's not pleasant. And in the age of the opioid crisis, it could become a problem.
Yep. How come you reckon you got all them needle marks on your arm, boy?
You can hear it, can't you?
So he's going through Walgreens, and he's trying to get some skincare products to try to deal with the scarring issue. And that's when the staff of Walgreens dialed 911. Because he was browsing skincare products. But by the time the police arrived, they said, he's stealing beauty products. Which, of course, is a double whammy, because he's a guy.
So that means he's probably some sort of prevert.
Well, the cops searched him. They took the terrified Walgreens employee's word for it. And they patted him down, shook him down. And here's the thing. He was not in possession of any stolen items. So the cops decided not to murder him. Or shoot him, even. Or tase him. Or gas him. Yay, I guess we put this in the win column. But Mr. Dozier is understandably distraught. He said, I was more than anything shocked. I felt threatened, but I was just simply confused. I felt like I was being treated like I did something wrong. Well, that's because you were being treated like you did something wrong, Mr. Dozier. And the way they looked at me was as if I was a criminal. Of course they did. You were shopping while black. On a Monday evening. With skincare products. James in Illinois says, it's not the Walgreens, it's the St. Louis. You know what? I bet I'll get an amen from Andy the Angry Jew. He's pointed out the issue. Yeah, right. Not far from Ferguson. But it is the Walgreens. Walgreens said in a statement that it was looking into the incident. Just like Walgreens said in a statement that it was looking into the incident when a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian of conscience shamed a woman trying to fill a legal prescription because she was carrying a dying fetus in her womb. Walgreens will look into the situation. Looking into is not the answer, Walgreens PR flack person. Here, let me help. Walgreens said it will do whatever is necessary to remedy the problem. Racism, overt, casual, or of any sort, is unacceptable in the corporate culture of Walgreens. That's how you do that, Walgreens PR flack. Jesus! And this piece of sound has been around for a few days, but I felt like it really does need to... It needs to be shared. Oh, wait a minute. So again, the internet's still up. Who knew? We'll get to it, I hope. Stand by. Irish Dave's St. Louis. I don't think they do that absent orders from HQ, which is in Chicago, also, too, where it was founded, Walgreens. Now, a few days ago, noted Republican moderate Susan Collins had a little chat with Jake Tapper over at CNN. All about Supreme Court justices and the like. And when I first heard it, I thought, no, we gotta work our way through this one.
Views and rule on the facts of the case with fidelity to the law and the Constitution.
I don't have to tell you this, but you're going to get a lot of pressure from groups and individuals who support abortion rights. And one of the things that they think about you is that you get played by these judges and that ultimately, if you vote to support whoever President Trump nominates, presuming that person comes from this list of 25, that one of your longest lasting legacies is likely going to be that you voted to confirm a justice who ultimately tipped the balance of power, political power, on the court and voted to overturn Roe.
Let's take a moment. That's exactly what happened with Gorsuch. We've been to this tap dance recital before. I will not support any judge who demonstrates hostility to Roe v. Wade. Gorsuch is hostile to Roe v. Wade, and she voted for him.
Well, I know that's what the left is saying, and that's just so at odds with my record.
Bullshit! You know, she'll say that she disagreed with not giving Merrick Garland a hearing. How many trips did she take to Chinless Mitch's office to say, listen, bub, give the man a hearing, or I'm going to go caucus with the Democrats, and I may just take a few folks with me. Well, the answer to that math question is a great big zero. She's an attention hound. She loves the attention. She loves being played as a Republican moderate, because then the for-profit media lets her go and get away with voting like the single most conservative member of the Republican caucus, and never says a word about it. Because, you know, the story's moved on.
I have, year after year, been named the most bipartisan member of the whole United States Senate.
By who? Publishers Clearinghouse?
I've proved my independence, and more important, I care deeply about who serves on the court. I have...
You didn't care deeply enough to stop Neil Gorsuch. You didn't care deeply enough to do what you could to get Merrick Garland a hearing. Deeply. Deeply. Jesus Christ, if you dropped a rock in her deeply, there wouldn't be enough water in the puddle to make a splash.
Voted against justices... judges, and I have voted for them. I supported both of President Obama's appointments to the Supreme Court. And I always have...
Yeah, and you know what? Neither one of them had a track record of saying hateful shit about Roe v. Wade. False equivalence much, Sue? But that sets her, well, you know, I voted for two Obama appointees, so now I get to vote for two Julius Geezer appointees.
The same kinds of discussions in my office. I do a lot of work on the record of the appointee, and I ask probing questions to try to determine whether they're going to be an activist judge with an agenda, which I don't want on either the left or the right. I want a judge who will apply the law to the facts of the case with fidelity to the Constitution.
You know, like so many words, let's add activist judge to the list of phrases that have absolutely no meaning whatsoever anymore. Activist judge just means a judge a Republican doesn't like. Just like neoliberal establishment shill means anybody that Jill Stein doesn't like. It has no meaning. It's hollow. It's a cipher. And I'm still, there's not enough time left. Jake Tapper's not going to challenge her on any of that crap. But in that appearance and in other appearances on the Sunday shows this past weekend, she conveyed a fairly simple code to the people over there at the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation of what it would take to get her vote. Do not sit down at the witness table or the nominee table and start shrieking about the precious little fetuses. Don't do it. Don't say a word about how you thought Roe was wrongly decided. When one of those godless heathen Democrats asks you if you would vote to overturn Roe, you say, "Well, I could not possibly answer that question, as it is an issue that may come before the court, and as a dedicated jurist, I cannot prejudge any case." Well, do you demonstrate any hostility to Roe v. Wade? Absolutely not. I'm not demonstrating anything.
And then Susan Collins will vote for you, because Susan Collins is Simon Simple and Simon Pure.
And all she's asking for is a little bit of cover. Is that too much to ask from a potential nominee? I think not. Irish Dave says, demonstrates hostility, achieving new lows in weasel words, as long as the candidate keeps it on the down low. Precisely. So you get an idea, a pretty good idea of where this is headed. Note coming in from Silent R. Lamar in regard to the Walgreens case. Something for your plate. When they lock up all the blacks and brown people, what will the poor whites do when they come after them? Well, they're already going after them, Silent R. Maybe not to the same degree and with the same ferocity, but they're already doing it. But that overlooks something. These racist pricks are not looking to lock up every person of color in the United States. They're looking to kill, beat, maim, and imprison just enough of them to serve as a constant warning and a constant reminder to everybody else to keep their damn heads down, say yassa and no ma'am when appropriate, step off, don't eyeball. And for God's sakes, don't vote.
Seems pretty clear. A quick update on Pool Patrol Paula there in South Carolina, Stan. Remember Pool Patrol Paula? Went to slapping around on a young black man for daring to be at her swimming pool. Well, she was charged with assault. I don't know why it wasn't battery. Maybe that's just how they define those kinds of things in South Carolina, Stan. But Pool Patrol Paula, otherwise known as Stephanie Sebi Strimple, God, why does that sound like something on Cartoon Network? The Sebi Strimple Show. She got dinged with third-degree assault for hitting the young man. She got dinged with two counts of assaulting an officer for kicking him and pushing him and biting another officer. And now Rodan and Fields, which is a skincare company. Thank God the gentleman in South Carolina It didn't try to buy skincare products from her. But Rodan and Fields has said, in accordance with our policies and after assessing statements from law enforcement, this independent consultant is no longer affiliated with Rodan and Fields. And I'm sure she'll be applying with Avon any day now. Minutes before the hour, remember, James has a $25 challenge on the table. Hopefully that will be met, and that'll get us down to 280, so that'll mean just 480 for Friday on the front porch. And that would be great. Some of these stories are unpleasant. Some of them are heartbreaking. And I'm trying to. Hey. Thanks for letting me know, Isaac. After initially stating that they would not lower flags to half mast for the victims of the shooting in Annapolis, I guess the Trump regime decided that that just wasn't very good optics. Gavin Buckley, mayor of Annapolis, got a call around 7:15 a.m. Tuesday saying that the president had changed his mind. Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, lying, of course, said, "Last night, as soon as the president heard about the request from the mayor, he ordered the flags to be lowered. I spoke with the mayor last night and again this morning to let him know the president's decision." We're learning a little bit more about the shooter. In the note, or he left a note. He sent a letter to the Capital Gazette's lawyer saying that it was his plan to go there to the Capital Gazette and, quote, with the objective of killing every person present. He mailed it the same day he committed the murders. Weirdly, he formatted it like a court document. God Almighty. Well, then I guess I'll go ahead and go with this story. Comes out of Talibama. Ardmore, Alabama. Nobody loves their guns more than Talibama does. Ardmore is a little town in Limestone County, Alabama. North Alabama. And once upon a time, a woman named Deborah Ann Rivera was married to a fellow named Darwin Brazier. Didn't work out, as so many marriages don't. They got divorced. And then her ex-husband, Darwin Brazier, started harassing, threatening, and intimidating her. Twice in a little over a year, Deborah Ann Rivera had gone to the court system of Limestone County, Alabama. First, in March of 2017, she presented a petition to Limestone County Circuit Judge Chad Wise, asking for a protection from abuse order against her ex-husband. She also asked that his firearms be surrendered. The Right Honorable Limestone County Circuit Judge Chad Wise could not find it in his in his conservative judicial soul to grant Ms. Rivera the protective order and refused to compel Mr. Brazier to surrender his firearms because, you know, freedom. The petition that she filed in 2017 said, among other things, that Brazier stole her personal contacts and hid a GPS tracker in her car. She also said that Brazier had provided personal information about her to a convicted felon so that the felon could harass her on Brazier's behalf. Judge Chad, ironically named Wise, said that was not enough to get a protective order. She put up with it for another year. March the 1st, 2018, she went back to court. She told Limestone County Circuit Judge Chad Wise that Brazier had called her so much that it had forced her to change her phone number, you know, at her own expense. This time, he gave her a temporary protective order out of the goodness of his heart. But it was temporary only, and on April the 10th, 1 month and 9 days later, the Honorable Chad Wise refused to make the order permanent and dismissed the case. According to the Decatur Daily, this past Sunday morning, Darwin Brazier allegedly went into his ex-wife's home, murdered his ex-wife, murdered her new husband, Radex Rivera, and murdered their roommate, James Hayward Boger. Because freedom. Because you can't just go taking away a man's Second Amendment remedies just because the little woman gets a little hysterical. Congratulations, National Rifle Association. You can carve another notch in your pistol grip. Anybody want to bet that Limestone County Circuit Judge Chad Wise has family values? I'll bet you he's just swimming in them. What do you want to bet he has an excuse? What do you want to bet he gets reelected? I wouldn't take the bet. Nope, sorry. About 12 minutes before the hour, you might find this interesting. After all the talk about China, turns out that, you got to do a lot of planning. You got to do a lot of advance work to prepare for a presidential campaign. I mean, Hillary Clinton started planning her 2016 campaign as soon as she knew that she was out of the 2008 campaign. building alliances, relationships, that kind of thing. Getting the signs ordered and whatnot. Well, they do the same thing on the other side. And, of course, if you're a Republican, it goes without saying that you are going to wrap yourself in the flag. Nobody wraps themselves in the flag quite like a Republican, especially a maggot Republican. And so the Trump 2020 campaign knows that they're going to need a lot of American flags. And when you need a lot of American flags, you go to China. Li Jiang owns a flag-making company in China's Zhejiang province. That company says that they've been hired to make flags for Donald Trump's presidential campaign in 2020. Li Jiang said he's already making new blue and white flags for Trump's re-election campaign already. We also make flags for Trump for 2020. Seems he has another campaign going on in 2020, isn't that right? The blue and white flags, and I'm not sure what they are. I haven't seen one of those. Well, they're making 100,000 a day. And they're all labeled Made in China. He's also the go-to flag maker when the Communist Party of China needed red scarves for their young pioneers. This goes against the Trump campaign's pledge to only buy American, you know, America first and all that. Executive director of Donald J. Trump for President, Inc., the president's 2020 re-election campaign committee, Michael Glassner, says every component of official Trump merchandise has been 100% made in the USA. You know, except the ones that aren't. Li Jiang is not worried. He said, we have a big price advantage over our competitors, and our clients are very smart. They would always go to the cheapest place. If China is cheap, they would go to China. If America is cheap, they go to America. But in all fairness, it's rather difficult for an American company to compete with a Chinese company that's able to, you know, chain 8-year-olds to tables, right? I wonder if maybe Mr. Jiang could produce some MAGA hats with those little chips in them so that when you press the button, or maybe put them on the flags, it plays a little digital version of God Bless the USA. Going back to the case in Limestone County, Alabama, Ron in Raleigh says, do you think Judge Wise lost a minute of sleep over his shoddy decisions? Not a second, Ron. Not a second.
Because Ms. Rivera probably wasn't helping make America great anyway. Right? Yeah. So, that brings us pretty close to the end of the program. With the Independence Day holiday just having passed, one last little note. Down in Texas, there's a little tiny newspaper, the Liberty County Vindicator of, curiously enough, Liberty County, Texas. And they decided it would be a good idea, with the 4th of July coming up, to print on a daily basis excerpts from the Declaration of Independence, instead of printing the whole thing all at once, just a little bit at a time. And they posted them on their Facebook page. Well, they put 9 of them up without incident. But according to Casey Stinnett, the managing editor of the Vindicator, but part 10 did not appear. Instead, the Vindicator received a notice from Facebook saying that the post goes against our standards on hate speech. That's right. The Facebook algorithm, designed by God knows whosky, decided that a passage from the Declaration of Independence was hate speech. Because, you know, you can't have human beings reading this kind of stuff. I mean, you couldn't hire enough human beings to read it. And you wouldn't want to read or hire human beings to read the stuff that the algorithm flags. I mean, that's just somebody you'd have to pay. It was paragraphs 27 through 31 of the Declaration of Independence, the so-called list of grievances. Editor Stinnett said he doesn't really know which grievance it was that lit up Facebook, but he guessed that it was paragraph 31. The one that we talked about last night, Dr. Bill and I. Quote, domestic it accuses George III of instigating domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages. You know, on further reflection, that kind of is hate speech, isn't it? But we kind of hate to say that about the Declaration of Independence. But they were clearly unhappy with George III. And that language was deliberate to try to inflame the colonists against the whole document's purpose is to inflame the colonists. Against what was at the time the lawful rule of the British Crown. Interestinger and interestinger. So there we are, Thorn in the Side Thursday. A challenge remains on the table as we close out the program, courtesy of James in Illinois, that would have taken us down to $280 to go in fundraising. So maybe somebody in the next few minutes we'll answer that, or who knows, a member of the overnight podcasting crew. But thanks to everybody for bringing this down the way you did. Thank you so very, very much indeed. It makes it a lot easier to do the program when there's less sweat involved.
And at 85, 89 degrees in the studio, it's already sweaty enough, frankly. Thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.